Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I've had one too many cigarettes burning up my lungs. Had the taste of one too many lips hanging off my tongue. Oh, oh, oh. Sunday morning getting high, drinking here alone. Thinking up a brand new alibi for not coming home. Oh, oh.
People who, like the founder of the show, recognize they're on a dangerous path and make the difficult adjustment to be an amazing person. Share poems that reveal the duality of our vulnerability and strength. Capture the internal battle of the demon and angel on your shoulder. Deep poetry, thoughtful commentary, and fun chatter for sinners, saints, and everyone in between. This is part sinner, part saint, part of Late Night Poets After Midnight. We are a group on allpoetry.com. You don't have to be in the group to participate, but it's more fun if you are, because you can follow along, read with us, and comment, and talk to us in the chat. I'm Aphasiana, and with me, I believe I have Babbler. Hello, Babbler.
Hello. How's it going?
It's been a little bit of a rough couple of days. I think I had a seizure. Not totally sure. I would rather a seizure than a stroke. I woke up and I couldn't talk and I couldn't move and I couldn't figure out where I was. So it was kind of a disaster. And most of yesterday I couldn't form a sentence. But today, here I am. I'm talking, I'm walking. So, you know, not so terrible.
That's good. I've been still sick. I have RSV, I guess. I've just been really out of it for like the last like week and a half. I literally spent all day today thinking it was Thursday, up until about 15 minutes ago when I was about to get in the bathtub and my husband was like, "Don't you have a show today?" really fun. I'm like, "That's Friday." He's like, "Yes, and it's Friday." I'm like, "Oh my God, it totally is." So, Faziana is our wonderful savior tonight because I would have prepared nothing because I didn't even realize it was the correct day. So, thank you.
Yeah, no problem. I have to say, Daniel Deschino gets some credit for that because he was, like, on it when yesterday I texted him making no sense. I was like, "Seizure show talk?" And he was like, "Are you saying you're not coming to the show tonight?" And I was like, "Phil, call." And he's like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "No."
No.
And so he was like, "Okay, what needs to be done?" And he figured stuff out for last night. And then he was sort of like, "Do you have the things for tomorrow?" And I eventually got my poop together and did. I'm pretty sure I sounded like completely crazy. It's like I woke up like 5 minutes before I was supposed to be doing a presentation for a whole bunch of kids. So I call my boss and I'm like, "Story, kids, sleep." And she was like, "What?" And I'm like, "Not there." She was like, "Oh, I better go do that."
Not there.
Which was accurate, but, you know, not the most professional of communications.
I mean, it's what you got to do.
Right?
I had a guy who worked for me once. He was, like, just wildly reliable, you know, like, always, like, just super on top of everything. And I really appreciated him as an employee. And then one day I got a phone call, and it was his mother. And she's like, "Ryan's not going to be into work today." And I'm like, "Oh, is everything okay?" Because, like, he wouldn't have it, you know, like, it's not like he was a teenager, you know. He was, like, an adult. So I'm like, "Why is your mom calling me?" You know.
Yeah.
I'm like, "Is everything okay?" And she's like, "Not really." And then, like, he grabbed the phone and he's like, "I just got hit by a car. I'm in an ambulance. I'm not going to be able to make it into work today. If I'm feeling better, I'll try to make it in halfway." I'm like, "Dude, it's okay." Slip in from the scene of your accident. And he didn't drive. He rode a bicycle. So a car hit him while he was riding his bike on his way to work. And he, like, called me from the ambulance to let me know he was going to be a bit late. And I'm like, "Don't come in."
Wow. Well,
please don't.
I mean, but the thing is, I've had jobs where they are not understanding about stuff like that. Like, and it was like, the weird thing is, it was like jobs that pay way less than what I have now. Like, I worked at this little terrible coffee shop, and one day I called in sick, and they were like, "Well, you know, if you can find a replacement, then we'll just dock your wages and you won't be fired." And I was like, "I can't find a replacement right now." And they were like, "Well, that's not acceptable." And my dad called them back. I was about 14 at the time, I think. And he was like, "I just picked my daughter off the floor and we're on our way to the hospital and you will not be punishing her for not being there today." And they were like, "Oh, so she's like actually sick?" And he's like, "Yeah. Okay, you're not going to be punishing her." And they're like, "It's Saturday morning. Everyone just goes partying," and calls it. And he's like, "She's sick. It's done." And my dad is a little bit scary. I mean, like, he's very nice, and there's no actual reason to be scared of him. But when he says something, like, people listen. He's like, "She's not in trouble."
Intimidating.
Yeah. Anyway, we should get to the poetry because nobody wants to hear about my passed out on the bathroom floor stories anymore. Hello, Weaver of Dreams, Ben Hart, and Jenny Hunt. Lovely to see you on our board tonight. And yeah, Weaver, you don't want what we've been having because it's not fun. She thinks we're all like doped up, but really we're just crazy. So at least I am.
Yeah,
we have two carryovers before our contest. So I'm going to put those up. We'll read them, and then we'll talk about our contest. So I'm going to read one by Psyker. And this is called Lament of the Shadowed Soul. In the realm of shadows, I yearn to cry, but my lungs, entombed in sepulchre's deep, consume the wails, the whispered sigh, as phantoms within their vigil keep. I long to glimpse the dreams that fly, yet the sable curtain my eyes enshroud. In the abyss of night, I falter, try to break the chains of twilight bound. Upon the path, my steps betray, as anchors forged in nightmare's lair drag me down to the murky fray and bind me to the depths of despair. To cherish love, my heart desires, but trapped in chambers somber and bleak, entwined in tendrils of sorrow's quagmire, it flounders, aching, frail and weak. In the tempest of sorrow, I search for solace, as metaphors weave their crypt dance through the tapestry of anguish, a fragile balance of hope and fear in a haunted trance. But in the shadows, a glimmer I spy, a beacon of light, a sanctuary near, to mend the broken, to let the heart sigh, and at last release the tears long seared. For in the embrace of the darkest night, a new dawn awaits, its promise profound, to guide the weary, the lost, and the contrite, to a haven where love and solace abound. End poem.
Great read, Faziana. And I thought this was a really interesting piece. I mean, to go from something really dark to, you know, a glimmer of light, you know, the change in tone, you know. In the realm of shadows, I yearn to cry, but to not even be able to, which I relate to immensely. I struggle with crying. I think it's probably been about 2 years since I've cried. At some point I will, I think, maybe. You know, I can cry if I get drunk, but I don't do that because that, I don't know, it feels like flirting with danger, you know, to be using, like, alcohol as an emotional crutch. Like, can't cry unless I'm wasted. That seems like a really great way to sign up for some long-term problems I don't want. But, you know, I find that kind of just relatable, like being trapped emotionally in your own head and unable to express it. It's kind of what I get from that, you know. But trapped in chambers, somber and bleak, entwined in tendrils of sorrow's quagmire, it flounders, aching, frail and weak. There's something really, like, darkly wistful. You know, it feels like almost gothic, but it does. It has very modern language. Like it's not written in like an antiquated way, but it does feel very dark at the same time. You know, and then at the end, but in the shadows, a glimmer I spy, a beacon of light, a sanctuary near, to mend the broken, to let the heart sigh, and at last release the tears long seared. You know, it's not about not crying, it's about actually crying. It's about finding, like, that release and the catharsis of being able to express it, which I really like. You know, it's not about, like, being happy, it's about expression, which I really enjoyed. There's also a really long AN on this one, which I'm going to go ahead and read because it's almost like hearing from the author themselves. So I'm just going to go ahead and give the AN here a read. I sought to capture the essence of feeling trapped within one's own emotions, struggling to express and experience the most basic of human desires. I wanted to create a vivid, metaphorical landscape that reflected the internal turmoil of the narrator, who feels stifled and constrained by the burdens of sorrow, fear, and despair. By using metaphors such as lungs entombed in sepulchres and anchored in nightmare's lair, I aimed to evoke the sense of suffocation and helplessness that often accompanies emotional pain. I also used imagery of darkness and shadows to represent the overwhelming negativity that threatens to consume the narrator. Despite the poem's somber tone, I chose to end on a note of hope, suggesting that even in the darkest of times, there is a light waiting to guide us towards solace and love. This, I believe, serves as a reminder that the human spirit is resilient and that healing is possible, even in the face of seemingly insurmountable challenges. Lovely, again. Overall, I really liked the piece. Your thoughts, Feciana?
I agree that I think that it was a great piece, and also that the AN was awesome. It's really cool to hear the poet's perspective on things. You can tell that he put a lot of thought into this. You know, he had intention in writing it, and he reflected on how that turned out. And I think that shows why it's such a great piece, because he really did put a lot into it. It also has some really nice structure to it. I thought the rhymes and the cadence worked really nicely. I liked the line, "as anchors forged in nightmare's lair." That's such a cool line. And that you're anchored into the nightmares. So even when you're out of the nightmares, you're still connected to them. There's still that darkness that is pulling at you. And I also liked, "through the tapestry of anguish, a fragile balance." There's really, really good diction throughout this, excellent word choices and phrasing. Well done, Psyker. Babbler, I'm going to put yours up now.
So this is a pre-write. I wrote it a while ago, but I thought it was very closely related to the theme you put here. So this is buried memories. Words curdle in my mouth, burning the way up and the way down, way, way down. I pressed them face down into acid until they stopped struggling, one glass at a time. Sans tombstone, they were never here. Too many bottoms up loosens the tongue, unearthing skeletal syllables buried in the soil of my belly. Don't say it. If you say it, you thought it. And if you thought it, you meant it. And if you meant it, you're a piece of shit. Repeat that thrice in the mirror. Is that just another body we thought we buried, burbling up and whispering from the inside of the ear, fetid tongue clicking undersides of wobbling teeth down to the bone under the meat? Knobbed fingers strum against the harsh names chained elbow deep down near the drums, tickling the hunger and bare feet wrapped in the cold mewling of kittens that stiffened while I slept. Picking a chord from wrinkles hunkered down in my brows, humming a tune into the moldy pillow soaked in the sea that I wept. A few more shots now, she'll knock at my throat, raw and uncivilized, unwanted but half expected, spilled into the brain carpet of the soft one stool over. No bleach better than rum, no better than my mother, no worse than scum. Bottoms up, bottoms up. A book of black words, dances on the tongue. End poem.
Wow. I really love this so much. You take abstract concepts and you make them solid, like with the way that you connect it to the body works so well. The trying to to swallow it and not let those words up is done really creatively. Way down. I like that you like increase the ways as you go. The way down. And the way that you describe it, like putting it face down in the acid, you know, you're drowning those words. You're not letting them up. I really, really liked the part where, well, really all of it. I'm like, this one, and then this one, and this one. Too many bottoms up loosens the tongue, unearthing skeletal syllables buried in the soil of my belly. If you drink too much, you're going to end up saying things you regret. But I love skeletal syllables. And then the part in the next stanza really feels like an aside. Like I can picture if this was like a play, you would look at the audience and say, don't say it. If you say it, you thought it. And if you thought it, you meant it. If you meant it, you're a piece of shit. Repeat that thrice in the mirror. And I can imagine you, like, saying it in the mirror over and over again. It's true. I really like the way that you're analyzing yourself here, because I think more people should actually reflect on what they're saying and what they're thinking. Although I've had therapists tell me you have to stop feeling guilty for things that you think, because it's how you act on things that matters. Don't be like me. I really like the way that you use all the different parts of the body, like from elbows to like every little bit. Picking a chord from the wrinkles hunkered down in my brows, I really like, because, you know, eyebrows really show expression. You know, when you're angry, when you're skeptical, when you're like, eyebrows are very expressive. So those wrinkles hunkered down in your brows, they say a lot. That was a good choice of body part to use there. There's the reference to your mother, who we hear about a lot in many of your poems, which ties it all together and needs to be in the inevitable book by Babbler. So very, very good, and I loved your read of it. You're very expressive. I said very 1,000 times, and I hate the word very because it's like I need to have better vocabulary than that. but I mean it. Ben Hart says, "Woo, Babbler! Woo, what a behemoth!"
Thanks, Ben.
Speaking of Ben, I'm going to read his poem next, but first I'm going to tell you what his poem is inspired by. So our contest tonight is based on a screenshot that I saw from Twitter, and I don't even use Twitter, but I saw this, and I liked it. So Trash Jones says, doing brain laundry, separating my thoughts into lights and darks. And then she comments later, update, left one dark thought in the lights, ruined the whole load. so that was the prompt. And we got some really cool responses to it. We're going to start with Ben's. Okay. September Suicides by Ben Hart. 1. The fleeing. Last Saturday, long past the hour of 3, I got the feeling that this world is not in need of me. And when for answers I did pray, I found a bullet at my feet that had not been there when in my empty fury I fled onto the streets. Death laid in the middle of the chalk outline that you drew round our romance. And as the rain piddled, laying all your hard work to waste, I debated the divine, whether martyrdom wasn't just fancy suicide, and if perchance I could get a taste. 2. empty fellowship. Will I live to see the employment of my heart? Should you ever need a paladin to defend you against the dark? Darling, all you need to do is ask. But like Argonath, in whose shade I would marry you, to drift forever on Nanhithil, you always push me back when I offer to carry you and make me play the fool. But, dear, you won't hear me mention it. Love is many things, but not intelligent. Indifference may be rational, but it'll never catch us all. And if you choose to deny my offer, the soldier you put forth better prepare for slaughter. 3. September 15th. Buried neck deep in concrete, I once had shoulders you could build on, strong enough to break open the streets, strong enough to stand my ground. I would have held you up, but you just let me down. We made plans for life, but you chose to fucking die. What? My best wasn't good enough for you? Funeral at 15, and I'm still searching for the meaning. You're not the first, but you're the worst of my demons. The kind who's too cold to dance with. I just wanted the untamed time go by. I just watched the untamed time go by. I couldn't fucking move for years. And you weren't there for me to scream at or push you away. I'm just smoking at your grave. There goes another day. I thank God for those who stayed and the devil that they died. Fucked up as it sounds, the pain requires both of them to take away. Most days I'll say I feel all right, when in truth, I can't stop racing through my mind. When so much behind my eyes is just another fucking lie. I guess you left it to lost passerby to say goodbye to me in dreaming. When your heartbeat bled out into monotone machine screaming, I tell the world I am healing. But the truth is you're my favorite excuse as not to be feeling. You are the demon that introduced me to Keaton. Oh, sweetheart, what have you done to us? Why did you leave it to me to misremember what led to September 15th? Sometimes I feel stupid that I still miss you. 4. Acoustic 2. She slips whispers into ears of trepid lovers, stolen from bar stools against their sober choosing. And her tab, she covers with mumbles and musings. She keeps glow-in-the-dark marbles, crazy cat eyes, that she won from her brother, unspent in her pockets. And warns them in the daylight to play against the sky, so the rich man's rockets have something to chase across the lonely night. She had a pyramid of Polaroids on her chipped windowsill, an altar to the one-night stands collapsing with every quaking directed by tender hands as pleasure ran down every primrose hill. And in her sleep she sings, perfect little lyrics lost in time, writing poems that don't rhyme, and that her lover cannot weather when the morning brings an end to her tender tethering. She played guitar, but only ever acoustic, but never rooted in love. She would not sing, but instead, she let some lost lover make something up. End poem.
I really liked this piece. I enjoyed the storytelling with the different scenes, you know, to go from to each of these different scenarios, and they feel like interwoven, and yet they set different scenes at the same time. It's interesting because it's like it's a continuation and evolution of grief seen through different stories is what it feels like, you know. You know, the first one, you know, the fleeing, you know, when wondering whether it's worth living. You know, the first one feels like contemplating suicide, you know, there's some really great lines in here in particular that I really liked. You know, the death laid in the middle of the chalk outline that you drew around our romance, you know, like a murder scene, like this is where it died, you know. I thought that was really strong and interesting imagery. I also really liked the word piddled here, you know, and the rain piddled, because when you hear piddle, you know, you hear like the trickling water, but it's also like, at least in the U.S., I don't know about other places, but you're kind of slang for like when a puppy or something like that pees, you know, it's like not cutesy. I don't know how to say it, but like a diminutive word way of saying urinated, you know, so it's like this half-assed pissing, which I think is a wonderful way to describe rain. You know, it's weak and kind of lame. I thought it was a great word choice there, you know. And then this idea of debating whether or not martyrdom isn't just fancy suicide. You know, like, you don't even have to take the blame of killing yourself if you just make someone else do it for you. You know, like, you know, manipulated into murder is kind of an interesting concept. You know, it's bleaker than my laughter, for sure, but I'm one of those people who laughs when things are bleak, so there you have it. You know, but just this sitting there at, and it says long past the hour of 3, for some reason, you know, I think a.m. I'm not thinking you're sitting there at 8 p.m. going, oh, it was lunchtime, not that, you know, I'm thinking it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, and just contemplating death. And kind of wanting it, you know, and perchance I could get a taste, you know, this emptiness. And then in an empty fellowship, you know, it's like this attempt to form this one-sided relationship, you know, willing to do absolutely anything for this other person, but they don't want you. And also, like, threateningly, like, it's, like, toxic, you know, because if you choose to deny my offer, the soldier you put forth better prepare for slaughter. So, like, anybody that you do choose, I'm going to rip them apart. Like, wow, okay, that seems healthy. None of these people or scenarios or stories seem, you know, entirely emotionally stable. That one, to me, seems like the most, like, violent, you know, wanting desperately to be, like, the person for somebody and then to be like that, like, overly protective of them to the point where you, like, they're with somebody else to turn against them. September 15th feels like mourning, and it's in that angry stage of grief where you're both hollow and pissed off. You know, this has the word fuck or fucking in it quite a few times, you know, angrily. And to attend someone's funeral at 15 and not, you know, you're still, like, rationalizing their death and you got to blame somebody, you know. And when it's suicide, there's really only one person to blame. Well, I guess two, depending on who you are. You could blame yourself or you can blame other people. You can blame the world, but you got to point your finger at somebody. And this is kind of pointing the feeling at them, you know, being so angry that they killed themselves. And left you behind. I was actually having a conversation earlier today with an employee of mine who has been, her husband was murdered a couple years ago, and they are concluding the trials for the people who murdered him. And she was talking about writing a letter, because I asked them if they wanted to write letters for the trials. And, you know, her daughter wrote one, and she wanted to write one, but she's, like, really on the fence about writing it because she's not angry. And she, you know, has been talking to the family members of the people who killed her husband, you know, and she's not, she they said, you know, they came and they apologized for her loss. And she said she was sorry for their loss, too, and they seemed really shocked, but because, you know, their family members didn't die, but it's like, but yeah, but they're going to be behind bars, and they've gone through so much trauma because of this whole thing. And, you know, her ability to have that kind of empathy, you know, really comes from a place of wanting to forgive and seeing the best in the world. But her kids' letters are a lot more like this, which, of course they would be, the anger and the rage. And I think it's especially a very youthful response. But then it comes down to that last line, sometimes I feel stupid that I still miss you. Because that's really what it's about, right? It's about the missing, it's about feeling lonely. So I liked that quite a bit. And then this last one is interesting to me. This woman who has all these wonderful idiosyncrasies, goes to the bar and she pays for her cab with mumblings and musings, like basically getting other people to pay for her drinks. And she has all these silly idiosyncrasies and makes herself like alluring to other people, but never is in love with any of them. It's all like this inability to love yourself or others. It paints a really interesting story. I really enjoy the different characters in each one of these. I thought this was fascinating. And in thinking it in the context of your contest, as like maybe four very disparate stories, like different pieces of laundry. Really liked it. I thought it was really interesting. I enjoyed the variety of characters and the kind of narratives that followed it along. So, good job. And I liked it. Your thoughts, Daviana?
Well, that was an incredible comment. So it's difficult to follow because you're very insightful. But I'm going to touch a little bit on each of the pieces. I agreed with you, Babbler, about really liking the part about the chalk outline that you drew around our romance. So it's not the chalk outline around a person. It's the death of the romance, which makes the person think about death more literally. In the second one, I like that it had the Lord of the Rings reference. So the fellowship, like Fellowship of the Ring, but what made me really see the connection there was when it, like the Argonath, which I'm sure I'm saying wrong, but that's that big statue, I think, where they're, the guys are like holding their arms out like protectively, and there's like the water in between. So those statues as the big protectors of the fellowship. But there is that rejection where not everyone wants to be saved. And it's not just that they don't want to be saved by you. Sometimes people don't do well with being offered help. I definitely see that with my husband, where he is super independent. And like, if he's upset and I ask what's wrong, he like doesn't want to like deal. Nothing, I'm fine. Obviously, you're not firing 100% of the time, and that's okay to not be okay. But some people are not very good at accepting help. And it's really frustrating when you're a caregiver person like me, who naturally just wants to, like, nurture the shit out of everyone. And, like, maybe because I don't have kids of my own, and I am, like, a very motheringly kind of person, but, like, I take on people, like, even within the all poetry world, I have so many little poetry babies who I take care of, which sounds weird, but trust me, like some of them are out there listening, and I know. It's just not everyone likes to accept that, over the top loving that some of us want to give. So this does seem like it takes it to an unhealthy level of like, I'll destroy anyone who you do accept help from. Which can be a little scary. The September 15th one was really hard to read because it was so emotional. It was really well done, but I could definitely see myself crying at this one if I let myself. I was trying to focus on the words and not let myself really fully feel it. It's a really intense piece. And I like that it had that anger in there. I couldn't fucking move for years. It's like, blaming the person who you lose for feeling stuck, for maybe not being able to open yourself up to love anyone else because you know that pain of losing someone. And having that anger at the same time as really loving them, and, you know, not being able to express that anger. The truth is, you're my favorite excuse as not to be feeling. And it becomes an excuse where you haven't moved on, and it's not really their fault anymore that you haven't coped. So this had a lot of really complex feelings explored. I appreciated that. And then in the last one, I thought it was whimsical in some really great ways. You know, she has the marbles, and she has the connection where she's like looking at the rich man rocket and like comparing it to her own life. And she has the Polaroids, the detail of her chipped windowsill. I mean, I've lived in some pretty sketchy apartments, and there's something about that chipped windowsill that just it strikes home for me, because it's not like a terrible thing to have that the chipped windowsill, but it shows you're not in that perfect little bubble. You know, it just feels really real to have that detail there. This is a really intense poem that puts together a lot of different feelings and yet feels cohesive. Amazing, Ben.
Mm-hmm. It does manage to feel cohesive. And I think it's because it all carries that kind of somber, depressed tone. Like, it's very melancholic throughout. The tone really holds true. So I like that the emotional timber is the same, even if the stories are different.
Yes, that is a good point. I've put up another poem by Linda Evans. If you would read that, please, Babla.
Absolutely. This is I Can Do This by Linda Evans. Every moment of every day, the devil on my shoulder seeks to blindside me by leading me astray. Oh, I do so wish he'd go away, but it's clear that he won't leave of his own accord, for he's enjoying himself immensely and never seems to get bored. Meanwhile, when I try to extricate him with a wickedly malicious grin, he only digs his claws deeper, ever deeper, into my skin. But come what may, I am absolutely determined, one way or another, not to let him win. End quote.
Great read, Babbler. I could hear the determination in your voice there at the end. Absolutely determined. I think this has a lot of strength in it. You know, it recognizes that there's that darkness that is always trying to send us in the wrong direction. The seeks to blindside me seems like he's not successful in that, because she sees it coming. She knows it's going to be all the time. And I like that talks about trying to extricate him can only dig the claws deeper. Well, for me, that makes me think about, like, when you're trying to just think about something that is, you know, wrong within yourself or within your life, and you kind of spiral out. And, you know, sometimes thinking about things, you can process them, and sometimes you just go into this spiral of darkness that's like everything is suddenly wrong. It feels like when she's trying to get rid of this malicious demon on her shoulder that might be happening, she's spiraling out into the darkness. And yet she holds on, determined that she's going to get out of that. So it has that empowering ending as well. What did you think, Dabbler?
Yeah, I thought this was like almost a mantra, or like something you would, but mantra is not the right word, like affirmation that you would say to yourself, or like a narrative, you know, inside your own mind, you know, I can do this, you know, and every day know that you're battling something, you know, even if you're not sure what it is, maybe it's addiction, maybe it's self-confidence, maybe it's general anxiety, you know, like whatever it is, it's not really specified and it doesn't need to be, because it's one of those things that the more vague it is, the more universal it is, because people's demons can take any shape and form, you know. I can't think of words today. Whatever, you know, I was thinking like a Harry Potter where, you know, that creature that takes any form of whatever you're most afraid of, you know, it works like that universally.
Bogart,
yeah. I kept thinking booger, and I'm like, that's not helpful, but it's surprisingly close. like, it's not a booger. Like, anyway. You know, but every moment of every day, the devil on my shoulder seeks to blindside me, you know, just this constant battle, and just wanting a break. And really just wanting to not feel that pressure anymore. But it being constant, but even with the constants, just deciding to fight it anyway, you know, it speaks of like just constant pressure and constant battle, but also matching will. So I really liked it. It really just feels just like a determination, you know, like a commitment. I can do this. I liked it. I thought it was well done.
I agree. We have an audio for this next one by G.A. Grimm.
Bleach Bomb by G.A. Grimm. How do I get clean again? These thoughts leaking like a pen. Every one of these stains bleed. Like wild animals, they breathe. Howling loud all through the night. Caged together, they just fight. So I have to let them loose. Their war halted with a truce. I was warden of their hell, never going back to jail, like convicts finally free. Each one starts to rush at me, rabid pets without the chain, stalk and chase me in my brain, wolves with cutting teeth that bite, insatiable appetite. In the dark they are well fed, as I lay here in my bed, in order to stop their hunt, feral things I must confront. I the jailer and the beast, executioner and priest, the poor victim and sharp knife, mad architect of this life.
Ah, lovely SoundCloud. I love G.A. Grimm's SoundCloud. His accent always just reminds me of like Jake Gyllenhaal, like even the timbre of his voice. It's just something about the way he speaks. I really like it. So thank you for the SoundCloud. Always love them. This piece, you know, it's that same kind of internal struggle. You know, how do I get clean again? These thoughts leaking like a pen. Every one of these stains bleed. Like wild animals, they breed. You know, and my first thought with, do they get clean again? You know, we're talking about sobriety, which it absolutely can be. But it can also just be like a type of lifestyle. You know, when you start thinking dark thoughts, they can proliferate, become a slide back into like an old way of being. And when I read like, I was the warden of their hell, never going back to jail, like convicts finally free, each one starts to rush at me. You know, it's just to be attacked by your demons, to have so many demons that you have to fend off all of the time. You know, it's just kind of this battle. And I like the idea of them as like wolves, you know, but your own wolves. But it makes me think of, you know, that concept of like the two wolves that live in your brain. Well, this is like a whole pack, and none of them are particularly great, you know. But those just being your own, you know, internal demons. Rabid pets without the chain stalk and chase me in my brain. Wolves with cutting teeth that bite. Insatiable appetite. Just being eaten alive by your own weaknesses. A relapse of some sort, you know. And then I really liked the last stanza too, where it was like all these different opposites, you know, the jailer and the beast, you know, I'm the person who puts me in the cage, but I am also that beast inside of me. Like, I'm not two people. I'm my impulses and my sanity. I am my mental health and my mental illness. Like, I am my strengths and my weaknesses. You know, the executioner and the priest, the poor victim and the sharp knife, and the mad architect of this life. You know, it makes me think of that, can't think of the name of it again, but that house in California that just has like an absurd number of rooms where she just kept building and building and building on it, and it's just this like giant house, you know. The mad architect, you know, it is wild and a bit crazy, but it's the life you got. So I really liked this. I thought this was a really great extended metaphor for like those internal struggles, perhaps pertaining to relapse and you know, addiction of some sort, you know, but maybe even just dark thoughts or depression. I really liked it. Well done, G. A. Grimm. Fiziana, your thoughts?
You know, normally I do go the same way with you on the getting clean, thinking of it as drugs, but because the quote involved laundry, doing the laundry of your head, I don't know if in this case it actually is. It could be. But it was more like, in my mind, just trying to, like, clear your head to clean out the negative thoughts and just have the clean ones. But like it said in the prompt, once you leave one little dark one in there, then everything gets stained. So when it talks about every one of these stains bleeds like white animals, like the wild animals they breed, it's like the thoughts corrupt the other thoughts. Where if you have a pessimistic thought and then you're trying to, like, have a daydream of, like, oh, what if this went well? And then your negative thought creeps in there. And it's like, but this could ruin it. And they kind of sneak in to the good dreams. It kind of makes me think about the movie with, I think it's called Slumberland. Jason Momoa is in it, and they're going from dream to dream. They can be in other people's dreams, but the problem is if a nightmare follows you, you end up ruining the people's dreams because the nightmare goes into the good dreams and corrupts things. So they mess up some stuff, and even though this isn't about going into someone else's dreams, I think letting that nightmare creep into your good dreams, letting that the dark thoughts creep into your positive thoughts is really brought to life here with the animal metaphors of, you know, they've gotten wild in the brain and they're going from thought to thought and they're not staying in their little cages. It's not compartmentalized anymore. That final stanza, I, the jailer and the beast, executioner and priest, the poor victim and sharp knife, mad architect of this life, really makes me feel like it connects to our show in general, the part sinner, part saint. It's the duality of being either side of things. I think he really captured that. So he worked well within the individual prompt, but also with the overall show. Very impressive poem, and I have to agree, I love the audio. G. A. Grimm, please keep making audios. You have an amazing reading voice, and it's just so cool to hear it in your own.
Yeah, no, I agree with that take, too. Yeah, by all means, if you don't see it the same way as me, don't feel like you have to agree. I think I can, and many times am wrong.
No, it's cool. cool to have multiple perspectives. It is. That's, you know, it's partly why we do this, because, you know, gets people thinking about things. And, you know, I can be totally wrong, but it makes you, you know, consider other sides. And I don't mean you specifically, Babbler. I mean, like, if people hear multiple perspectives, it might get them thinking about different ways that their perspective could work and spark whole new ideas. So poetry is cool because it can be interpreted in multiple ways. Now, I think it's your turn to read, although I'm not totally sure, but whatever, I'm going to make you read. Babbler, please read the poem by Stories Untold.
All right. This is Brain Laundry by Stories Untold. Growing up, I was always aware of my thought, even when I write, as we can stumble into darkness so quick and do not realize what a quick thought rolled out onto the tongue causes regrets you hold alone. When young, so taught, carry toothpicks with me for a day, some white, some black, and bad picks throw away. If I run out of black toothpicks, can see the one at fault in losing friends is me. Understanding others happy and free chooses not to play with me, always a fussing and bringing others down. Found myself alone on the playground. Same with my writing today, keeping check on what I write, not let it get away. To make a poem of 10 titles to see where my mind has gone dark or light in the lead or lead. We know when we fall to darkness as we shut ourselves away, refusing all others to enter, having our way. Tell me how that is working for you. Can you not see? The one who chose to think like that is me. So change your direction. Choose the light and see. End poem.
This is really fascinating. The idea of having those toothpicks and throwing them away as you have a dark thought or a positive thought, and then realizing that if you run out of black toothpicks, you were probably the one causing the conflict. That's really interesting. I mean, there's this, like, dark side of me that's, like, having sharp things when you're having bad thoughts might not be the best. But toothpick stabbings. Perhaps I should throw out a black toothpick for thinking that. but I like the concept of, like, having that. Now I want one of those, like, I don't have one, but it's like the fidget toy that's like the little like bubble wrap thing where there's like you push in the little circle. But I want one that has like some that are one color and some that are another color, and then like have the dark thought poke the one that's that color. Except I'll probably play with it and just like push all the things. But anyway, it's an interesting concept to me to keep track of when you're the one who's causing the issue, and then it holds you accountable. You're holding yourself accountable for pushing people away, or for being the one starting the conflict. I really like that idea of being self-aware. That's cool. End comment.
I was trying not to cough, sorry. Like, not trying not to cough. I was coughing, but I had it on mute so that I wasn't coughing. Anyway. I thought this was interesting as well. The idea, so first thing I want to comment is the punctuation on this is really interesting and made it a little bit stumbly for me to read, and I found that fascinating. There's periods here where I would consider it the middle of a sentence. You know, so, like, my brain is like, stop. And then I'm like, but wait a minute. You know? Like, even from that first line. Growing up, I was always aware of my thought, even when I write. You know, I'm like, you know, the thought break there, the break in the middle, is a bit jarring, and it's interesting, you know, because it gives it this really kind of wild cadence where, like, half of my mind wants to continue and the other half wants to stop. And that really kind of continued throughout. You know, the locations of the periods were very often surprises to me, which I found really interesting. And also, yeah, this allegory of the toothpicks, you know, carrying toothpicks for a day of two different colors. And you get rid of black toothpicks when you've done something bad, and white toothpicks, you know, I guess if you do something good, I don't know. It's not really specified. You know, and understanding that, like, if you do bad things and you live in negativity, that people won't want to hang out with you. People don't want to spend time with you. Misery loves company, but who wants to spend time with misery? Like, it's too bad to see social, you know? So I thought this was really fascinating, just this idea of having a stand-in for, like, what you've done in a day. And now it's turned to writing, you know, seeing my writing today, keeping check on what I write, not let it get away, to make a poem of 10 titles to see where my mind has gone dark or light in the lead, as a way of monitoring yourself, you know, like, am I having a good time? Am I having a bad time? Like, especially if, you know, like, I'm bipolar, and those things kind of creep up on you. You know, it's not like I wake up one day and I'm all of a sudden depressed. I mean, that can happen, but it's not usually how it happens. I can usually watch myself slipping. And interestingly, one of the things I do is look at my music that I listen to. So I track the music that I listen to. I listen to quite a bit of music. And I'll look it up on, like, Last FM or something like that and see, like, what kind of music am I listening to lately? How much music am I listening to lately? And I can really tell when I start to slip into, like, a depressive state, because the amount of music that I listen to skyrockets. You know, it'll go from, like, oh, I listen to, like, 11 songs a day to, like, you listen to 69 songs. You know, it's a fairly good indicator, actually, of my mental health. So I thought it was interesting that it's, like, tracking the themes of your poetry is keeping tabs on your mental health, and keeping white and black toothpaste as, like, external reminders. I liked it. I thought it was an interesting concept. So I enjoyed it.
I feel like if I'm looking at the contents of my poems, it would be the consensus is I'm very dark. But I think I tend to write when I'm in a dark place, and when I'm in a positive place, I don't really write. But I don't know.
Yes, I would agree with that. I don't tend to write about happy things. I even wrote a poem about it that's like, I can't write happy poetry. It's not because I'm not a happy person, it's because writing is my outlet for negative things. You know, I don't usually get so happy that I need to express, you know, like...
Right? Yeah. But my husband's, like, insulted by it because he wants, like, a positive poem about him, and I'm like... It's not that I don't love you and think positive things. It's just that's not how I write.
Sometimes I read those and I'm like, God, this is so cheesy.
Yes, exactly. I can't make it not cheesy. There are people who make it work really nicely. Not me. If I try to, be nice, it doesn't come out nice.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah, so I feel that.
All right. Our next poem is One Step Forward, Two Steps Back, and it's by Sybil Mignonia. I am alone, but not so alone, as to look at the window and imagine careening out of the reflecting glass. I am alone, but not so alone, that I must think no one enjoys me. Do they? I am alone, so I shouldn't gaze at milky white wrists and imagine silver and red. Should I? Every step forward is sinking into sand, biting crabs, pinching through the grains, drawing wounds out and poem.
I think this fits the theme very well. You know, it's a pretty short piece. You know, each stanza is like 5 lines, just a few words per line. You know, but talking about how you go just a little bit deeper each time. I'm alone, but not so alone. You know, some people still like me. You know, I'm alone, and then you're just like looking at your wrists. You know, like just this progression of thoughts. That's kind of summed up in that last stanza. Every step forward is sinking into sand, fighting crabs pitching through the grains, drawing wounds out. This makes me think of like intrusive thoughts, you know. Everybody has them. Everybody has them. And if you think yours are the darkest and worst, most horrendous things ever, and you don't ever want to utter them or talk about them or admit that you had that thought, you're not alone. You don't have to talk about it, but you're not alone. But let it go. Like, don't keep thinking about it. Because you will. You'll spiral into this downward thought thing. You know, just kind of drag yourself into, like, miasma of... It's weird how it works. But you let yourself have the intrusive thought and then just be like, that's an intrusive thought. And then just let it wander its ass out the door. I certainly get them. And sometimes I laugh at them because they're just absolutely inane. You know, I'll be looking at myself in the mirror and I'm like, I need to lose like 350 pounds. And it's like, that's insane. No, I don't. Like, I can't possibly lose 350 pounds. But that's literally the thought that I have. But, you know, to acknowledge it is absurd and let it go. But they start small sometimes. It literally is like, I'm alone. And then you just keep dwelling on that and it gets worse. I think it works really well with the theme, but it's also a good warning because this is a real thing that can happen. Yeah, when you get those random thoughts, just invalidate them most of the time. So, especially if they're wildly unrealistic, and then just laugh at them. I laugh at my own crazy. I'm okay with that. But I enjoyed this piece. I thought it was well done.
I definitely was on the same page in terms of it was intrusive thoughts. You know, looking at the window and then imagining careening out of the reflective glass, you know, that intrusive thought of I'm really high up. What would happen if I jumped out of here? The second one I think is a really common one where it's like, it's not like I'm so alone that nobody likes me. And then you question yourself, do they? I think that that's really good one to have the question for. Especially right after the statement of like, it's not so alone that I must think that, and then questioning it, the you know the self harm of the wrists, imagining the silver of the knife and the or razor and the red of the blood, and then there's again the question mark. It's like it's not like I would hurt myself. Would I? Should I? There's the statement, and then there's the question. And I think the statement kind of shows that the intrusive thought is there because it's like you know that that is a thing that is a thing that might be thought, but you're like, no, I'm not so bad that I'm thinking that. But you are thinking it. And it doesn't mean that you're necessarily suicidal, but the thought is there. So I thought this really captured that feeling of intrusive thoughts, and that last stanza really does get into the how it just, you get more bogged down in it if you let yourself go there. So very well done, and hopefully you don't let these thoughts win. Okay, so now we have one by Mamia. If you would read that for us, please.
I feel I haven't heard one from Mamia in a while. Maybe she writes other things, but I've been my own hidey hole, so.
Same. I've been kind of lost in only reading what is in our contest lately. And so I haven't seen her either, but it's good to see her. My internet just cut out. Can you grab the one by Mamia?
Absolutely. Put it up on the board so anybody who's on the board can grab it. Is Bleach Does Nothing by Mamia. Whitewashing walls inside my head, the smell of bleach, a heavy perfume. Tiles ring aloud at every brush stroke, staccato rhythms, painting stains. Carl Jung perches on the ceiling corner, spying, washing hands, buzzing theories. Freud babbles in tracking in mud, sexual innuendos adding Jackson Pollock blotches. My bristles now red, spreading Rorschach images, copper coating my tongue, biting down expletives. Giving up on order, the walls become kaleidoscope tunnel, disappearing into entropy. End poem.
Great read. Thank you, Babbler. This is really interesting, the idea of trying to, like, wash out your head of all those dark thoughts and it being, like, the heavy perfume of bleach. Like, bleach smells awful. You know, it's meant to clean things out, and it does, but, oh, it's just sometimes that clean is worse than when it's dirty. The rhythms of trying to wash it out, being a painful sound, staccato rhythms, painting stains. She uses some really good vivid metaphors. Like, you can picture that wall and the staccato ceiling. Using philosophers, Carl Jung and Freud and how they would feel about things, and then Jackson Pollock with the art there. I think she's really creative in her references, and love that it used the Rorschach images. And then copper coating my tongue, the taste of blood being copper, and the bristles are red there, trying to bite down expletives. So it's like, you know, when you try to hold in that negativity, you end up hurting yourself, not letting yourself see what you truly see in those images. Disappearing into entropy. This is really powerful. I'm so happy to have one from Mamia again. She's very deep in her writing and just artful references. Thank you, Mamia. This is beautiful.
Yeah, I really like this one as well. You know, trying to clear your thoughts out. And I almost imagine it's like try and clear your thoughts out by, like, rationalizing, you know, but you can't. He's keep having these kind of darker philosophical thoughts, you know, like the artists and philosophers that are mentioned here are known for being a little bit chaotic, right, a little bit out there. Freud, especially in, like, his over-sexualization of everything, and Jackson Pollock in the wild splatterings, you know, Rorschach with the ink blots, you know. Just trying to, like, overanalyze yourself, you know. So, like, you're going through, like, psychoanalysis on yourself, but doing it a bit wildly. And that doesn't result in a blank mind. you know, it results in a colorful mind. Even when you're frustrated and angry and kind of filled with all of these wild thoughts, you know, giving up on order, the walls become a kaleidoscope tunnel, disappearing into entropy. You know, it's like failed meditation, and instead just like racing thoughts. You know, I picture just like overthinking everything, like going into mania almost. So, you know, theorizing yourself. So I thought it was really interesting, you know, like just overanalyzing every little thought that comes into your mind. I really liked it. I thought it was a really intense and insightful way to talk about, like, overthinking, essentially. You know, the happy point is in the middle. You know, white walls make me also think of, like, an insane asylum. You know, like, you know, just very devoid. Very empty. Same with that kind of bleach smell. You know, just sterile, you know. And neither one is great. There's two extremes, right? So I really like this. I thought it was really well done. And I agree. It was nice to read from Mamiel again. So great, right?
I have to agree about the white walls. I actually really, truly hate white walls because they make me feel like I'm in the hospital. So whenever I'm, like, looking at apartments or something, I'm like, nope. I cannot wait until I own a place and I can make it really colorful because blank walls really freak me out. Anyway, our next poem is by Daniel Descino, which is my buddy who is my co-host on Double Helix. Well, my temporary co-host while Dex is on leave. But they're both awesome. So here we go, faded jeans. Oh, how the threads of knowledge weave and wiggle through the fabric of time. Such a pure and innocent tapestry in a child's mind. So long ago, weathered and torn, my thoughts have cycled, dirt and filth that have infested my fabric. I must scrub with both hands in frantic desperation on the washboard till my fingers bleed and wash again to forget the blood-daubed cartoon and bleed again and wash. But the more I scrub, the more the fabric fades. My skin becomes wrinkled and calloused, numb my touch, each painful memory a laughing insomniac imp, each past purity a hug from mother's arms, by a long-forgotten fireplace on a cold winter's night. Black and white together make gray. Negative and positive together make zero. One color plus another color makes not one of those colors. I wear with me the experiences of each day, and the washing machine, with good intent, just fades them all the way. End poem.
I enjoyed this, you know, just kind of looking at thinking through things, you know, and trying to scrub yourself clean and it's just making you bleed and become numb to things and just wanting it all to fade out. I thought it was really interesting. You know, jeans here in the title is spelt with a G, you know, like genetics, not like pants, you know, for people who are listening. You know, but I do think that the homonym is very much intended, you know, with the laundry metaphor, of course, you know, just this starting out with just really trying to frantically wash it out, you know, to want to, you know, forget the blood-daubed cartoons and bleed again, like this painful youth or you know, trouble that's happened in the past, and the cyclical thoughts and thinkings and the keeps coming back and, you know, coming back to it, each painful memory, a laughing insomniac imp, each past purity, a hug from mother's arms by a long-forgotten fireplace on a cold winter's night. And then I love this piece, how it talks about how so many things, if you add the opposites together, you know, you get like something akin to nothingness. You know, black and white together make gray, negative and positive together make zero. One color plus another color makes not one of those colors. you know, but most, you know, in the general idea of color theory, you know, not getting into too much on color theory, because most what you know about color theory is probably inaccurate. If you add opposite colors together, you get brown. You know, so it's still not gray. It's still not nothing. It's just brown, which I think is kind of interesting because it's just kind of blah, you know, in a lot of ways. Although I will say brown is, like, one of my favorite colors. It just doesn't usually come to mind. People ask me what my favorite color is. I usually say yellow because that's what comes to mind first. But I actually really like brown. I like the color of wood and dirt and warmth. I paint a lot of things brown. But, you know, I liked this kind of additive thought process here where it just kind of peters out with one color plus another color makes not one of those colors. You know, it makes something else. You know, I wear with me the experiences of each day, and the washing machine with good intent just fades them all the way. You know, how you just forget things, and time just kind of wears away at everything. You know, wounds that feel fresh will once feel dull, but that kind of applies to happy days too. You know, the best days in your life also fade a bit. So it's just kind of how life and time work, right? You know, remember everything like it was yesterday. So I really enjoyed it. I thought this was an interesting write about just kind of how time fades everything. And it doesn't matter how hard you scrub it, it's going to happen at the rate that it's going to happen. So I really liked it. Well done, Daniel.
I feel like you just said it all. ditto. I think you captured that really well. See if there's anything that you didn't totally say. I found it interesting that in trying to clean out the bad thoughts, the fingers bleed, so that ends up making it so you have to wash again. So it's like you're trying to get things clean, but you end up making them dirty in a different way. You hurt yourself, and then you're trying to clean that up, and you know, you kind of numb yourself to things, and then you can't fully enjoy the good because you've developed those calluses trying to deal with the bad. So I found that interesting because it's true metaphorically that, you know, when you've hardened yourself against getting hurt, it's sometimes harder to let in the good times as well. So I agree with everything that Babbler said. And I liked that recognition of dulling the good times as well as the bad. And our next poem is by My Angels 3. That one's for you, Babbler.
Righty. Catalyst by My Angels 3. There's a voice inside of you buzzing like 10,000 bees. It's the quiet deafening where the wind meets the autumn leaves. One by one, the leaves fall, undressing cold winter branches. And in that new and empty space, you take in your wild graces. Behind those sweet, soft eyes, frenzied waves crash and scream. And sometimes, in certain tides, burns a fierce summer gleam. I know the colors blur and wash where turbulent rivers meet to smash at battered, beaten rocks and sing out to the trees. At times, I watch you float with your calm, beloved music. I witness your dim light catch fire and crackle like burning tulips. Within mine's milky, dizzy haze, an untamed angel sits in sin, searching for her place to rise and quell the din. End poem.
Great read, Babbler, and wonderful, right? My Angel 3. I like the buzzing like 10,000 bees is a quiet deafening. It's like when there's background noise that it might be something subtle, but but it makes it hard to focus on the sound you're trying to hear, that quiet deafening. For me, that happens when there's like a whole bunch of computers around. I am really tuned into the frequency of like the bzzz of power, and if that makes it really hard for me to hear people talking, even though most people can't hear that little bzzz. It's just a weird thing. But I think your thoughts can be like that, where you have so many different thoughts going on that you have trouble hearing yourself think in the big thoughts that you're trying to think, because it gets lost in the waves of everything else. And then the one by one, the leaves fall undressing cold winter branches. And maybe sometimes as your thoughts kind of falling away and not being able to focus, and the frenzied waves of crashing and screaming and not being able to focus on like one little drop of water is all you need. And it's all just like storming around. So for me, that's kind of like that manic feeling of, you know, when your thoughts are just racing and out of control, which was basically me on the days earlier in the week. And then when I crashed and had my seizure, then I was the one who, the leaves have fallen off and there's nothing there. Everything's blurred and battered on the rocks. But I think that this really works metaphorically. Your dim light catch fire and crackle like burning tulips. That's really interesting to me. I never think of tulips as burning. When I think about fire, I don't think about that. But it's really a colorful kind of image, because tulips tend to be very bright colors. Some really interesting mixes of images here. And I like the wording, like the word choice of quell. It's not a word I hear a lot of, and it's a pretty word. What do you think, Babbler?
Sorry. I'm like, oh, of course, she's wrapping up her comments, so this is a great time to cough. I really agreed that first stanza. I love the first stanza of this piece. I feel like it could almost be its own brevity. I really love it. There is a voice inside of you buzzing like 10,000 bees. It's the quiet deafening where the wind meets the autumn leaves. It has such beautiful flow to it, and yet it's so profound. You know, just all that thinking, all that rustling, like the low hum of thoughts. And it is quiet because there's no actual noise. And yet the tie-in to nature, too, makes me just think of listening to the things around you at the same time. I really enjoyed that first stanza just absolutely immensely, you know. And just kind of watching. I guess my interpretation of this is someone watching someone else struggle, you know, watching them have a hard time, you know, to look at someone else and realize, you know, they're overwhelmed. You know, they're having a lot of thoughts right now, and slowly things will get better. You know, one by one, the leaves fall, undressing cold winter branches. And in that new and empty space, we take in your wild graces. You know, there'll be moments of quietude. There'll be moments of inner silence. Between the crashing waves of anguish and overthinking and the hard times that you're having. But they see also those moments of stillness. You know, at times as I watch you float with your calm, beloved music, I witness your dim light catch fire and crackle like burning tulips. You know, to watch someone else who's struggling, you know, someone else who has mental illness, watching someone else have a hard time and see the grace in them and see the good and the beauty in them and know at the same time that they're struggling, I think it's just really wonderful. You don't see too many reflections on someone else. You know, I feel like this poem is very much full of empathy. You know, within mind's milky, dizzy haze, an untamed angel sits in sin, searching for her place to rise and quell the din. you know, those moments of peace, the good times that, you know, in here is viewed as like this untamed angel, you know, that this person is looking for, you know, their moments of silence, their moments of clarity, their moments of peace. I really liked it. To me, it seems like a real piece of empathy of watching someone else's struggle. And I don't read a whole lot like that, you know, a whole lot of pieces that are like, I see your pain. So I like this piece. I respect it. I think it's really well done.
I think that might need to be a future prompt.
Yeah, maybe.
This next poem is called Casting Lots by Dammit Dave. I try to focus on my happy thoughts, but often that is very hard to do. The darker ones stay busy casting lots to see which ones will come and turn the screw. The darker thoughts show up a lot at night when I'm seeking slumber in my bed. To toss and turn is then my hapless plight, and if I sleep, the nightmares fill my head. It's strange how the dark consumes the light, and happy thoughts will morph into despair. I swear my demons choose them out of spite to leave my heart and mind in disrepair. Though happy thoughts will come to make me smile, it's darker ones that often seem to stay. My demons love to go the extra mile, ensuring my regrets are on display. End poem.
Well read. And as I'm kind of used to with Dammit Dave, it of course has great rhythm and flow and rhyme. He writes in this perfect meter that makes it always so easy and interesting to read. I look forward to it. And I love his opening, you know, I try to focus on my happy thoughts, but often that is very hard to do. The darker ones stay busy casting lots to see which one will come and turn the screw. You know, like, oh, I'm trying to focus on happy things, but the negative things are over there going, it's my turn. You know, it's just kind of comical. You know, it's a bit of dark humor in it, which I, of course, enjoy. And then, you know, sitting in bed. And how, I mean, who hasn't done that, right? You could have had the best day ever. And then you go and you lay down in bed, and you're sitting there and you're trying to fall asleep. And then you're just, you find yourself thinking about, like, the stupidest, darkest things, you know? Oh, I haven't called my mom in, like, 8 days. What if she died? You know, just like, why do I do this to myself, you know? Oh, I'm going to fall asleep. Do you remember that one time when you were 5 and you broke your friend's toy horse, but you didn't want to tell her about it, so you just put it back on the shelf? You know, like, why do these things have to come up out of nowhere? But I think everybody does that. You know, I think it's one of those kind of just weirdly universally human experiences. It's strange how the dark consumes the light and happy thoughts will morph into despair. It reminds me of, I forgot who it was. I don't remember if it was a book that I read or something that I listened to, but I remember at some point I heard that, like, for every bad thing that you hear about yourself, it takes 7 good things to make up for it, because negative things stick to you that much harder. You know, someone could tell you, oh, I love your shirt 5 times, but one person is just like, why the hell did you wear that? And that's what you're going to remember, is the why the hell did you wear that? Even though so many other people like it. You need, like, 7 people to tell you they like something about you to counteract the one person saying they didn't, which really tells you about, like, the way we internalize negative things. So, yeah, you know, it's strange how the dark consumes the light and how we really kind of cling sometimes to negative things. You know, the happy thoughts will come and make me smile. It's the darker ones that often seem to stay. You know, I'm sad that happiness is the house guest and, you know, despair is the resident, the roommate. But that does seem to be how it is sometimes. But I enjoy the dark humor of this. I enjoy the pacing and the rhythm. Dammit Dave has a great way of making dark things feel lighter with his form. So I enjoyed it. Are you there? I don't know if Avazion is here or not. And, of course, can't check. So, I will read the next piece. So this is Moment Without Thought by Brundaban Panda. It goes like this. Mind is meant for will, want, intention, thought. Mind is master of senses to control their act. Mind meditates to concentrate self to a point. Mind's transcendental meditation is excellent. Mind meets neutral moment minus thoughts, means no versus status of opposite natures. Mind means the brain, the energy center of body, most important contest topic, brain laundry. Main duty of laundry owner is to clean clothes, maintain normal level of cloth, removes folds. Mind must be free from thoughts by self-effort. Mind, like a mirror, must be free from dirty dust. Mind, devotion, self-realization, good action, minus ego, anger, desire, greed, and evil intention. Condition when okay, the body also okay. Mind, peace, soul, peace, world, peace, can't break. Mind must be stable, wise, conscious, and neutral. Mind is means for successful journey of soul, of life soul. Mind holds life soul, and heart holds supreme soul. Mind must use spiritual liquid for brainwashing well. End poem.
Thank you, Babbler.
Back. All right. Did you hear that poem?
I heard part of it. So it seems to take things pretty literally. It even mentions the contest and main duty of laundry owner is to clean clothes. So it's more literal than I would have intended. It definitely makes use of repetition. So interesting take on the prompt. What did you think?
For the most part, I agree with you. You know, most of the couplets here start with the word mind. There are a couple exceptions, you know, like means, most, minus. But for the most part, it's pretty redundant on mind. But it is called Moment Without Thought, so it's kind of interesting that it is, like, mindlessly repetitive, which I thought was interesting. I also thought the part where they mentioned laundry was fascinating, too, because its most important contest topic, brain laundry. Main duty of laundry owner is to clean clothes, maintains normal level of cloth, removes folds. Well, if you're doing mind laundry and you're removing folds or taking out wrinkles, you, when you think of a brain and wrinkles are like good, right? They're thoughts, they're intelligence, they're developed brain. So if you're doing the laundry to take out the folds, it's like you're making yourself mindless. You know, it's like erasing your thoughts. It's like meditation to stupidity almost. I don't know. I thought it was really interesting, especially when it ends at the end with brainwashing, you know, because brain laundry kind of is like brainwashing, and the idea of taking wrinkles out of your brain I thought was kind of an interesting idea, especially for a poem called Moment Without Thought that is like highly redundant. So I thought there was some interesting subtext to this piece.
I like your insight there. That's all right. See, we need Babbler. Babbler sees between the lines. This is good. Our next one, we have an audio, and it's by Weaver. So Weaver of Dreams. Here we go.
I feel self-doubt. A scorpion sting when compliments come my way. I feel the jabs of, he doesn't really mean that. She is only being kind. They can't say you're crap, even though that is what they think. We all have to be seen to be supportive, even to dross like you. This inner voice tormenting me is, of course, my dear mama's, who brought me up to be seen, not heard, with the prospect of a severe beating if I did not comply. A stupid woman in many ways. She wanted me to shine, to reflect what good stock I sprang from, but I must never appear to outsparkle her. Hence her rage as years of bile etched lines across her face, pride and loathing hand in hand. The anger at what she'd given up for me was the dichotomy she always had to struggle to contain, else her true twisted nature would become apparent to all.
SoundCloud Weaver. I enjoyed this. The starting off with, you know, it's called doubt, you know, and this first stanza being about not being able to accept compliments, not believing the things that people say about you, you know, because you think they don't really mean them. They're disingenuous compliments, which I always found interesting. You know, I remember saying to my sister once, because she was feeling like she didn't look good in a dress, and we were going to a wedding, and everyone was like, "You look good," and she's like, "No, I don't." I'm like, "Well, have you ever said to someone, wow, that dress looks great on you, when they look like shit?" And she's like, "Well, no." And I'm like, "Then no one else is doing that either." I don't think a lot of people do that. I'm not saying nobody does that, you know. There are certainly times where I will look for constructive feedback or positive things to say about something that I don't necessarily really super like. But that's, you know, there's a difference between kind and feeding someone bullshit compliments. You know, I'm not going to walk up and tell someone that I really like something if I don't. Although sometimes it's interesting. If you're a really good friend of mine, I will come up and tell you that that was crap. Or I will tell you, you look like hell. Not because you do, but that's just because how I show affection. If I am mean to you for absolutely no reason and it is wildly uncalled for, that's because we're good friends. That's code for I like you, you know?
Me too. You know, like if I feel totally comfortable with you, I will tell it to you straight. Like, I can't remember. Recently, I told someone to like get his fucking shit together, and he was like, "I thought we were friends." And I'm like, "I'm saying that because we are friends." I'm like, "If we weren't friends, I don't really care. I just be like, yeah, you do you." But I'm like, because I love you, I'm gonna tell you you're screwing up. Like, do it.
I mean, I agree with that, absolutely. If you can't have the hard conversations, if you can't call people out on their shit, you're not really friends. You're acquaintances, because that's what friendship is getting down to brass tacks. It's being real. But that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about my, like, terms of endearment are, like, wildly unnecessary insults. Like a friend of mine, it was like their birthday, and I gave them a card that said, "Get better soon," and it's like, "Seriously, you're sucking ass right now." You know, that kind of stuff. Or like, I haven't seen them in a while, and I'm like, "Ugh, like, what the hell's wrong with your face?" Or, you know, when they come in, they're like, "I love you," and my response is, "Gross." that's what I mean. The completely uncalled for insults out of nowhere. Friend gives a really touching speech at somebody's wedding, and they're like, "How did I do?" And I tell them, "Oh, it was shit. You probably should have kept that to yourself. It's a joke." I just have very dry humor. But I don't usually use that humor unless it's someone that I know very well, because they'll know that that's a joke. You know, mm-hmm. No, it's not out of nowhere for me to call my best friend like a dumb bitch, just because. And if other people are overhearing us, they look very shocked. So, it was very deadpan. But yeah, that's what I mean. But I do also agree with what you said, but that's not really what I'm talking about. So I really relate to that first stanza, you know, and then, of course, the middle stanza is about how you got there, you know, the reason that you can't take compliments and the reason there's issues with self-doubt and self-esteem is being undermined by your mother, you know, only brought up to be slightly worse than she was, in her opinion, you know, do you want to reflect good stock? Well, how can you reflect that if the stock was questionable, you know? You know, severe beatings and things like that don't really make people shine, you know. It does bring that self-doubt. If you're constantly being cut down, you just wait for people to cut you down. You know, and then this last stanza, you know, hence her rage as years of bile etched lines across her face, pride and loathing hand in hand, the anger at what she'd given up for me with the dichotomy she'd always had to struggle to contain. You know, it's not really about you. You know, it's about her. She just wanted to hold you together enough to not, see her flaws. I also, when I read that line, you know, the anger of what she'd given up for me, oh, man, I related to that really hard because all the time as a kid, it happened just the other day. You know, I've been dealing with dental pain, and I don't complain to my mom because the same thing happens every time I complain to my mom. It becomes about her, you know. She wanted someone to come over to my house, and I said, no, now is not really a good time. I've got all this other stuff going on, plus my teeth hurt. And she's like, oh, I know about tooth pain. All of my teeth rotted out of my head, and I couldn't go to the dentist or see a doctor because I had to take care of you guys, and I had to put your guys' need first, and I had nothing, and we were poor, and it was the worst pain I ever experienced in my life. And it turned into, like, this 20-minute-long, like, I gave up everything for you guys, like, tirade of, like, invalidating, like for some reason it's a competition, you know, like, to who has worse dental. I don't know what the thought process is behind it, but it's why I never complain to my mom, because there's, like, you know, I don't really feel like the 20-minute lecture on how her life is worse than mine will ever be. I mean, there was literally one time in my life where she told me that I was fortunate for growing up poor because she grew up wealthy, and so I will never know the pain of having been rich once. There's some irrational stuff.
Wow.
But I really related to that line. I'm not kidding. I almost started laughing in the middle of it because I'm like, do you realize how asinine that is? Man, I'm glad I grew up broke and not rich, because then I never would have had to feel the pain of becoming poor. All right. Anyway, I related really quickly to this, just because that line in particular, the anger of what she'd given up for me. Like, you know, like, I didn't ask to be here. Like, don't blame me for your life choices. So I really liked it. I will never tell somebody that I like something of theirs if I don't like it. And I think you can tell, especially on the show, which pieces really resonate with me. I really liked this one, Weaver. Well done.
Same. I don't bullshit. You know, if there's pieces of it that I like, I'll pull it out. But if I say I love something, I really truly do. So when we compliment you on the show, we mean it, because, you know, I actually tend to get people not liking me because I don't go over the top, like, lovey-dovey about stuff if I don't love it. I'll be like, yeah, that was okay. I'm a little too honest. But I really like that she called self-doubt a scorpion sting. And it kind of makes me think about the thing with the scorpion and the frog, where the scorpion's like, can you carry me across the river? And the frog's like, I don't know, you're not going to sting me. And it's like, well, because, you know, if I stung you in the middle, then we both drown. And the frog's like, okay. So then, you know, halfway through the water, the scorpion stings the frog. They both die. And it's like, why did you do this? It's like, I'm a scorpion. And I feel like my self-doubt is kind of like that, you know, like it's just sabotaging yourself when you doubt yourself and makes you screw up just like you were afraid you were going to do. But it's there. And sometimes it's hard to take a compliment. Oddly enough, I take compliments much better from people who I know are kind of jerks because they wouldn't say it just to be nice. I think this is why I've had some really terrible ex-boyfriends, because I legitimately believed that they were attracted to me because I'm like, yeah, he's a selfish asshole. He wouldn't pretend. This is how demented I am, that I feel more reassured by the jerk faces because they wouldn't lie to be nice. All right, this is too much of a confession. Moving along with the poem. I like that it delves into the relationship with the mother and that thing of, like, children are to be seen, not heard. That's not so much, I think, with our generation. In fact, it's kind of gone, like, almost the opposite. But there was this, like, properness that was expected. And not just of children, but also of, like, I think the serving class, which I sound like a total snob saying that as a class, but I think that I'm trying to say that, like, there was a class divide, and I guess there still is, but I like to think that it's less obvious, even though it's still there, and, like, people who were, say, like, a waitress were supposed to be just, like, there when you need them and not a person, and I think people have been able now to be more real and full and people. But there was this pressure in the past, and perhaps it depends where you are to, I believe weavers in England, where, you know, children were not allowed to be the, like, children, really, to be rambunctious and, you know, as I would expect a child to be. I like the way it talks about she wanted me to shine to reflect what good stock I spring from, but I must never out-sparkle her. So, you know, you have to be good, but not better than her. And that is such a conflicting pressure, you know, to be awesome, but not too awesome, to be just exactly in what suits the mother. That is so much stress. So much stress. I'm really lucky that my mom was not like that. But it's just, I feel like stressed out just reading that and that pressure to be that person. Kind of reminds me of this book I read, I think it was called The New Normal, where the girl has a stepmom and a mom who are total opposites. And the mom is like a hippie, super feminist. Women should never wear makeup and should never shave and should never do anything to alter their appearance. And then her stepmom is a model who has plastic surgery and, like, is, like, very much, like, you have to have your appearance perfect at all times. And she has this pressure of, like, who does she listen to? Because she has both telling her what it is to be a woman, and she's like, I don't know. And this, even though it's not pressure from multiple people, it's pressure from one person, it's like trying to fit within that small window is so intense. And, you know, she manages to make me feel the anxiety of that struggle with just a poem, and I think that's incredible to give me the anxiety. I mean, actually, I'm in a mess of anxiety no matter what, so it's not that hard to push me over the edge, but Weaver is successful in doing so.
But the little story that you gave just made me, like, to give you an idea of, like, my weird sardonic humor is just, like, just get one fake boob. See how that goes.
Yes.
I weird everybody out. Who cares?
Yeah, just do half and half.
Did you see my half BBL? I got one butt lifted. Just one side.
Put makeup on just one side.
Yeah.
I'm getting a really interesting mental picture now. all right, I'm going to be dreaming about, like, Babbler being half one way. Okay. It looks like we're basically out of time. I don't think we have time to properly handle another poem. So next week we will be carrying over Jenny Hunt, Rob Azza, Peter Solway, Truth Chills, Tri Tran, and Graceful Words. So thank you all for your contributions, and we have not forgotten you. You will be in our next show for sure, and your poems are appreciated. We thank everyone who entered my contest. It was a really nice mix of responses to this prompt, and I think they were all thoughtful answers, and that's what I love about the entries in my contest. It's like, you know, people really dig deep, and I really appreciate that. That's what I like to see, for it to be not just, you know, on the surface. I see a lot of depth in these responses, and I'm really grateful to have those to dig into. Babbler, you are fantastic, and you have the most amazing comments, so thank you for that. And fill my eyes.
I will be putting together some... Go ahead.
Yep.
I was just going to say, I was putting together some contests this weekend, so keep an eye out on my to-do list for tomorrow.
Watch for Babbler's contests. I am excited to see the prompts. Fill My Eyes is awesome for giving us this time slot on her radio show. And thank you to Phil Gray Eyes and Pam Ray and Dan DeShino for stepping in last night when I was basically nonverbal, and they did my show for me. So thank you for covering Double Helix. I love the Late Night Poets team. Everyone came together and made it work when I was not able to do so. So thank you, thank you, thank you. You guys are the best, and have a great week. See you in our next contest.
Have a good night, everybody. Thanks for listening.